Falling Back is a new book based on over 3 years of ethnographic research with Black and Latino males on the cusp of adulthood and incarcerated at a rural reform school designated and designed to address criminal thinking errors among juvenile drug offenders. State University at Albany professor Jamie Fader observed these young men as they transitioned back to their urban Philadelphia neighborhoods, resuming their daily lives and struggling to adopt adult masculine roles. She looks to portray the complexities of human decision-making as these men strove to fall back or avoid reoffending and become productive adults. Jamie Fader is an assistant professor of criminal justice at the University at Albany, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
And thanks for having me.
It is a delight. The book is Falling Back, Incarceration and Transitions to Adulthood Among Urban Youth. And as I mentioned, you observed these three young men. We've been talking over the last week, half a week, since the president made his remarks on Friday and talking specifically about the effect of African-American young men and putting this very important issue back on the radar. So when we discuss this and when we debate this and when we read about this, this is what you've been studying. I mean, this really is what you've been looking at for so long.
Yes, it's kind of unbelievable that at this moment, this is kind of on the map and becoming part of public discourse, because part of my interest in writing the book is feeling like there really was very little attention paid to this very vulnerable group. And I wanted to kind of get out a message about just how vulnerable they are.
Why are they vulnerable?
Oh, they're vulnerable in so many ways. I think largely because we connect the image of the young Black male to the image of a criminal. And we can see that in their disproportionate representation in juvenile facilities, jails, and prisons. We can see that in New York City and D.C.'s stop and frisk arrest data, where 80% of the people who are pulled over are Black. We can see it in schools, even, where Black students are 3.5 times more likely than their peers to be suspended and expelled, which, of course, then leads to school dropout and later incarceration. So there are a number of factors that are kind of working together to basically ensure that this group stays vulnerable.
So the work you wanted to do, because ultimately you wanted to see how you take a youth who has been traumatized. I don't think there's any better word for it, right? They've been incarcerated, they've been traumatized by this experience. And I've had problems with this terminology for a long time, of a correction facility, because there's really nothing correctional about it. You take a person in and it seems to me the situation gets worse as opposed to better. And then you throw them out into society and you say, okay, now become productive.
Right.
So what tools in that utility belt that you're handed, what's in it? Not much.
There's not much. I mean, in the particular facility that I studied, which I call Mountain Ridge Academy, drug selling and other forms of delinquency are viewed as the product of poor decision making. And so they spend a lot of time going through hypothetical scenarios where they practice better decision making skills. Right. But they do this 5 hours from home in the middle of a forest. And then are dropped back into the same communities from which they've come, and are no better prepared to proceed into higher education. They're no better prepared for the job market, and now they have the additional kind of burden of criminal justice system involvement and supervision. So once you have that, once you kind of penetrate that sticky web of the system, it's extremely hard to get out.
So in one way, you could look at it and say, okay, yes, there's the stigma of being a part of that system. So who is going to want you in the future if you've been a part of that system and you have that stigma? I guess another way of looking at it is that you do have the criminal justice system that is overlooking you. You have someone to answer to for a certain period who is, quote unquote, monitoring you and supposed to be helping you go along that path. In my reading of the book, it seems where that kind of is where things kind of fall apart.
Yeah, I mean, these guys have come out of this institution with a sincere desire to change their lives. And growing up in poverty, in violent neighborhoods, as a drug seller, always looking over your shoulder, who wouldn't want to change their lives, right? So they come out and they have a fairly specific plan of how they're going to do that. They've got a probation officer who's in charge of supervision. They have a reintegration worker who's supposed to be providing them with services. And yet, none of that is enough to stack up against the real structural problems inherent in surviving and struggling to survive in these inner city communities.
So I want to get to that for a second. One of the things that surprised me was the optimism. I mean, if you take anything from the story, just the fact that there is optimism is for that moment before things go bad, for that moment is rather heartwarming.
And I think that optimism, I mean, it speaks to their resilience, but it also speaks to their sincere desire for things to be different.
Right.
And I was really surprised that they were surprised when they came back home to their communities and say to me, well, nothing's changed but me. This is a total shock to them. And I believe it's because they really came to believe that their lives were going to be different. And it was just the power of thinking better that would change their lives. And of course, it's not enough.
Because you're not only talking about going from, as you said, poverty to incarceration to a new life, but you are also talking about something that we all go through, which is growing up.
Right.
Of that passage between childhood to adolescence to adulthood and becoming an adult in this society. So, and God knows that's hard enough for all of us, as it is. Add in all these other factors, and you've got something that's really troubling. So, what did you find? You followed three people.
15 for 3 years.
15 for three for right. 3 years. So in that group, what were the trends? What were the trends that you found in this group of young men?
Well, it's not really a happy story. Out of the 15 young men, within the first 6 weeks of returning back to Philadelphia, five of them had returned to the drug game. One of them had been killed. Sharif was gunned down in the street less than 24 hours after signing a subpoena to testify in a murder trial. And he was found clutching 38 bundles of crack. And of course, the neighbors and family think that it was retaliation for agreeing to testify. So within the first 6 weeks, all of this optimism started to crumble. And by the end of the 3 years that I followed them, they had together compiled 36 arrests, and seven of them had spent time in mostly adult facilities.
And also, many of them fathers.
That was one of the more interesting themes that arose, and maybe one I didn't expect, was the importance of fatherhood to these young men. And if you kind of pay attention to popular discourse about young black males and fatherhood, you might be tempted to believe that they don't really care about being fathers, and they don't take responsibility for their children. And that's not at all what I found in this group of young men who were very serious about becoming fathers. They saw fatherhood as a way of reinventing themselves. One of them told me that his son was going to be his brain when he came back to the community and would remind him all the reasons why he wanted to fall back into being a productive citizen. And so fatherhood was a masculine role that they could kind of grasp onto and try to kind of make good in some way.
Did it work for any of them?
Did it work for any of them? Yes, for some period of time. What the research shows on fragile families, which are families where a baby is born outside the context of marriage, particularly in inner city communities, is that involved fatherhood tends to break down over time. And young men who want to be very active fathers tend to, 5 years in, not be so involved. And it's largely because their relationship with the baby's mom broke down. And went sour. And so they don't contribute financially. She cuts off custody. And over time, they aren't as involved fathers as they set out to be.
And in the examples of the more than a dozen people that you followed, incarceration also an issue as well.
Absolutely. Reincarceration.
Taking them out of the day-to-day.
Exactly right, which disrupts everything. Now we have to think about a generation of children that are growing up with parents who are incarcerated.
So I leave you with this question, which is the hardest one, which is, so where does your optimism lie after spending time with these young men?
My optimism lies in, recent resurgence in public discourse about this issue. I think we need to approach it with a two-pronged approach. One is targeting policies that kind of get young black males kind of caught up in the system unnecessarily, such as stop and frisk, zero tolerance policies in schools. But I also, I'm excited about a couple of initiatives that don't wait for vulnerable young people to get into trouble with the law, and instead identify at-risk communities and just wrap them in services from cradle to college. And that's happening right now here in Albany with Albany Promise.
Right.
So those kind of community-based initiatives that target multiple factors, health, housing, schooling especially, job preparedness, college entry. I mean, they really target the issues that lead these kids into really troubled lives.
Jamie Fader's book is Falling Back, Incarceration and Transitions to Adulthood Among Urban Youth. It is published by Rutgers and certainly essential to anyone interested in furthering the dialogue and discussion on these very important issues. Jamie Fader, thank you very much for being with us this morning. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.